911, what's your emergency?
Help, I'm on fire.
Oh, sir, can you tell me where your location is?
I'm at my house, and it's really hot. I'm over on Sunset Boulevard, and it's firing. Fire.
Okay, I'm seeing your location right now on my tracker. I'm going to send some firefighters over to you, sir. They will be here momentarily.
Well, that's great and all, but just to make sure I'm on fire, are they vaccinated?
I don't know the status of that, sir. I'm sending firefighters your way.
No! No, only send them if they have taken the jab.
Well, sir, I have
double
no
dose.
Way of doing that. Do you want firefighters sent to your house or not?
I'd rather burn alive than have unvaxxed. They're putting my safety at risk.
While you're on fire, they are putting your safety at risk by not being vaccinated.
Listen, this variant of the fire is stronger than the other variants of fire.
Oh, sir. Do you want the firefighters or not? Sir? And scene.
Wow, it's really
gentlemen.
Hot in here.
Welcome to Will and Amal Alive. Our cold open is luckily not a real situation, but it just might be because LAFD, the LA Fire Department, has fired over 100 firefighters for not being vaccinated. Crazy, crazy stuff. We are going to get to that. We're going to talk vaccine mandates, not just in the US, but across the world, particularly out of Australia. We're going to talk about some comments from Prince Harry about the great resignation and how it can be good for mental health to quit your job. Also, we have a trans athlete out of UPenn who is just dominating in female swimming competitions. Also, we're going to take sort of a political typology test, Will and I, to see where we land politically. What are our differences? What are our similarities? But first, let's get into the story here. The tweet with this video attached to it says, message to the people of the world. I'm not even going to give you a preface on what's in this video. We're just going to watch it and give you our immediate reactions. Let's get into it.
This message goes out to the people in Australia. My name is Christine Anderson. I'm a member of European Parliament, and I'm answering your SOS call. I will do whatever I can to make it known to the world that your once free and liberal democracy has been transformed into a totalitarian regime which tramples on human rights, civil liberties, and the rule of law. I'm imploring all of you around the world who still think your governments are looking out for your best interest. At no point in history have the people forcing others into compliance been the good guys. The welfare of humanity has always been the alibi of tyrants. Do you not realize that this vaccine does not protect you from COVID? It does, however, protect you from governmental oppression. For now, that is. But don't think for even a second that this is not going to change tomorrow. I'm a German, and we once asked our grandparents how they could have just stood by in silence, allowing a horrific totalitarian regime to come about. Anyone could have known. All they had to do was open their eyes and take a look. The vast majority chose not to. So, what will you tell your grandchildren? Will you tell them you didn't know? Will you tell them you were just following orders? You need to understand, it isn't about breaking the fourth wave. It is all about breaking people. Australia does not need a no-COVID strategy. What Australia needs is a no-oppression strategy. So I stand in support with your fight for freedom and democracy. We need to stop our governments from transforming our free and democratic societies into totalitarian regimes. We need to do it now. We need to stand up now.
I mean, it's a pretty straightforward call to action there. I always get mixed feedback when it comes to talking about Australia. There's Australians who say, well, no, we voted for this. We want this to happen. There's Australians that say, no, we don't want this to happen. We're in the streets. We're fighting. It's really hard to be where we're at in America and look over at another place and provide commentary for how people are feeling and what's going on there. But it seems like in growing numbers, people are taking to the streets and fighting this in Australia, in New Zealand. We see the Aboriginals getting highly involved in this movement. We see COVID camps being created in Australia. And to look at that and think that it's justifiable is just, I don't know.
Well, we have to look at Europe. Listening to Steve Bannon, I mean, he talks about how Europe is essentially always 3 to 6 months ahead of America. Steve Bannon, a national hero, love that guy. But he talks about how Europe is always 3 to 6 months ahead of the U.S. And in about 3 to 6 months, these types of draconian measures that we are seeing in Europe, especially when you're seeing Austria, which is now going to have mandatory vaccinations for people by February 1st, meaning that you might face jail time or get fined heavily for not being vaccinated there. Germany is locking down the unvaccinated, even with a 70% vaccination rate. They're locking down the unvaccinated, also with cases higher than ever, even with that high vaccination rate. And so these things will come to America. So it's important to look around the world. And what you can see, I mean, her being a member of the European Union and Parliament, I mean, is truly remarkable for her coming out and doing that. Mm-hmm. Because the European Union as a force has particularly not been a very good force. I mean, this is why Nigel Farage's movement got so much steam back in 2016 with Brexit and leaving the European Union, because people are sick of the European Union. They're sick of the globalist agenda. I mean, people want to be their own countries. Now we have all this stuff happening in Ukraine right now where our administration is coming and talking about, like, oh, we need to go and get boots on the ground, Ukraine against Russia and all this stuff. And these warmongers, all they want to do is go and fuel the European Union. That is what this is. I mean, looking back in 2014 in Kiev versus the European Union, I mean, these are their ways to expand their authoritarian dictatorship over all of these people. That is the strategy of the European Union. That is what they want to do. And so all of this, understanding that these kinds of things are happening in Europe, happening in Western Europe, happening in the rest of the world, we need to realize and say, oh, it isn't just happening there and we don't need to worry about it. These things will come to America. These things will come to America very soon if good people don't stand up.
I mean, it seems like we're sort of on the precipice of a great upheaval here. I don't know what's going to happen in any of these countries, but it's seemingly not good. There's a large group of people that are just adamantly not going to comply with this legislation and this sort of policy. And they are going to fight in a way that is going to get more and more extreme as the government response gets more and more extreme. If we're talking about lockdowns, we're talking about fining people. We are talking in Australia about going into the homes of pregnant women and people with their families and snatching them out of their homes and forcing them to go to COVID camps for a period of time. We have people escaping out of these COVID camps in Australia. I can't imagine that this goes, I wouldn't even say it's going smoothly now, but I can't imagine it's going to go as smoothly as it is right now for much longer. I mean, it's getting increasingly violent. We're seeing the videos out of Germany of police officers, the same thing that they were doing in Australia, macing people, attacking people, choking people, tackling people down in the street, all in the name of health and safety and wellness and vaccine mandates. If this starts to happen and, you know, these countries begin communicating with each other, these resistance movements begin communicating with each other, I don't know what we're looking at.
Punching me in the face for my safety. Thank you, right. Germany. Did you guys see what happened in Brussels this weekend?
Mm-mm. What?
No, of course. No one saw it because the amount of digging that I had to do to find this was extraordinary. That Brussels was having anti-vaccine protests for the mandates and everything. And these people were getting incredibly, there was violent protests. They were getting violently assaulted by the police force that was in Brussels, right? But you don't hear about this in the mainstream media news. So people are starting to rise up, but the media, they used to be an arm of the disenfranchised, the people who are not allowed to speak or don't have a voice. That media is now dead, and the media is now totally controlled. I'm rereading Andrew Breitbart's book right now. It's amazing. It's really good if you guys haven't read it. But he talks about how he grew up in a media landscape where the media wasn't as bad and then has turned into this behemoth of what it is today after the George Bush era and the Clarence Thomas trials, all these kind of things, turning as essentially a wing of the Democratic Party, the mainstream media. And that's not just mainstream media in America, that's mainstream media around the world. You look at the BBC and all these other organizations, they are just as bad. And so with all that being said, know that the real information about this kind of stuff isn't going to be put out there, but that you, as someone who is a responsible person who doesn't want to be that German standing in the sidelines like she talked about in that video, you need to be the person to go out there and do the information research and stand up against these things, even when it's scary and even when it's hard.
And it is happening. Here's a video out of New Zealand of some anti-vax mandate protesters, making their voices heard.
Fuck off!
amazing, especially since culture is being brought into it. I know, like, the political left has always been really good at grassroots organizing, about getting people to identify with their communities, to take to the streets, to join together, and to make these massive statements about where they stand on political issues. Unfortunately, the vaccine has become a political issue, and that's what people in New Zealand are doing. And this is Aboriginal tradition, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. But
it's a haka, Maori haka, right. Is what it's called.
The thing is that if you look through the replies on this tweet and you look at what the mainstream media said about this, they are accusing these people instead of being, you know, compassionate about their concerns or that they're not allowed to go into a mall or any of these kind of things. They label these people as culturally appropriating this culture. That is the level of delusion that the mainstream media and these leftists have, is that when people are standing up for their rights and trying to honor a people by doing this type of dance, they are instead getting called out for cultural appropriation and mm-hmm. that they are racist. So it's like, oh, I saw this thing the other day, this post, and it was like a picture of essentially like a barren wasteland. And it was like, well, at least you can tell your grandkids that you weren't a racist. It's like that is the, it's like wow. That's the world that we're getting to. It's like you live in this horrible place and the world around you is falling apart, but you're like, oh, at least I can tell people, you know, I stood on the steps of the Capitol with a trans flag. It's like that is where we are getting. Those are the things right. that people are more worried about than actually what these people were there protesting.
On the gravestone, it just writes, got to level 100 in the metaverse. Mm-hmm. That's what we're going to see. That's exactly. While everything is destroyed and we all live in slums. But at least I freaking got to meet Mark Zuckerberg in the metaverse and shake his hand.
Yeah, at least Chelsea Clinton thought I was a real stand-up guy.
Right.
You know?
I got an A on my 2+2=5 math test.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. You know, that's what your grandkids will be proud of you for. Not because you stood up for freedom or against tyranny or did your research or fought against people who would want to do you harm. It's because you followed the status quo and were labeled as not racist.
It's a good thought that people who comply are not the history makers, apart from being the people who enabled tyranny mm-hmm. and mass torture and death. That so if you want to make history and be on that side of history, then go on and comply your way into it. But if you want to make history and be part of the good guys, then do what Will's saying. Do your own research. Think for yourself. Do not comply. Do not go along with the mainstream narratives. Investigate. Believe your own, you know, there's this, what is it like, are you going to believe me or your lying eyes? And it's like don't believe what they tell you to believe. Believe your own eyes. Believe your own ability to research, investigate things for yourself.
It's like that Eagle song. It's one of my favorite Eagle songs. Lion Eyes? That song?
Nope.
Can't hide those lion eyes.
Well, we did Spotify Wrapped last week. You don't need to talk about your musical prowess anymore.
I don't even like the Eagles that much, but I like that song a lot. Lion Eyes is a great song. By
my dad likes the Eagles.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, guys, I'm going to get back on the subject here. We do support everything that you guys are doing. We know a lot of people from a lot of different countries watch us. We're constantly getting messages from Brazil, Germany, New Zealand, Australia, even Africa, sometimes insane. We support you in your fight against these vaccine mandates 100% and continue to not comply, continue to stand with your values, continue to fight for not only yourselves, but the people around you. And I think that's a key part of what the people who are complying and are telling you what to do with your body don't understand, is that you're fighting for them too, because it only elevates from here, it only escalates from here, and it only gets worse. The encroachment from the government only gets worse, and you are advocating for their rights to have choices. You are advocating for their medical freedom just as you're advocating for your own.
And it's hard to tell what's going to happen next, because I'm hearing so many conflicting reports from so many different people. I'll hear from people that say, you know, because of what has happened in America right now, the people have woken up, and that there is 2/3 of the country that is going to be, you know, just absolutely on fire with these next elections and all of those kinds of things, and just totally against the establishment that we have now. And then I have some people who think, well, you know, people like in California with this last recall, it's too far gone, and things are just going to continue to get worse. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen. But what I can tell you is that you being an individual, no matter how the parties go or how the government goes or anything like that, is that you as an individual can still be proud of what you did no matter what. And so put that into high esteem.
Yep.
Put that into high esteem that no matter what other people do or the rest of the country does or whatever else it might be, you as an individual stood your ground and said, no, I'm going to do what I know to be right.
Absolutely. And there's a reason that we'll never know the truth or what exactly is going to happen. And it's largely because our media is corrupted. How are we going to get truthful information? How are we going to be spared from misinformation and fake news, as some call it?
And I think everyone should realize that. Again, I just don't get why being against the news and mainstream media is a conservative talking point. It really should be an American talking point.
Yep.
I say this all the time because of how important it is that people who have a position of power like that, where they get to dictate the thoughts and emotions of so many people and then get bought out and then get to essentially mass produce their propaganda to people. I mean, that should be on everyone's mind. It should just be someone who wants to be free and be able to do their own research. I mean, everyone should be against the mainstream media. And one thing as well about the mainstream media, again, reading Andrew Breitbart's book, but he's so good. And he has this line that he's talking about. He says, I'm no longer going to cocktail parties with these people. You know, he was speaking at CPAC in, I believe it was 2010. And he said, you know, he called out these people at the New York Times by name, called them these creepy journalists, and said, I'm no longer going to cocktail parties with these people. It's essentially going to be scorched earth with these people. The mainstream media wants to destroy your way of life. They absolutely hate you. They hate everything that you believe in. They hate what you stand for. Look at how they have vilified people who we think are good people, who do mm-hmm. great things, and they have come and tried to absolutely destroy their lives. If they could, they would destroy all of us. So I agree with Andrew Breitbart in the sense that it is no longer a game of, you know, us playing nice with these media moguls and these big corporations like that. It is scorched earth on these people, and that knowing that you cannot trust them at all.
And it's sad because, you know, they're normal people who have normal families and who have disagreements within their family and still love their family members, which is interesting. And it reminds me of the opinion piece that Andrew Yang wrote when he left the Democratic Party and registered independent and said, you know, I no longer want to be politically affiliated. And he talked about being behind the scenes, not only at these debates for the presidential candidacy, but also with the media, and saying, you know, it is truly all theater, that he would sit behind before going on television and be told by his fellow candidates and by people in the media, like, hey, we're going to throw this jab at you, or we're going to start this fight and start this drama, but, you know, we'll grab dinner afterwards. And a lot of what this is theater. They come on and they scream at you and they yell at you and they demonize you, and then they go home to your family, who is probably quite similar to you and probably shares values like your own. But they check that out the door when they come to do their job. And that's why the news is no longer the news. That's why mainstream media is not truly giving you media. They're giving you opinion pieces on a day-to-day basis. And it's sad that that's the state of affairs, when you know they know people who are like us, who believe what we believe, and they're not demonizing them in their personal lives, but they will come on a public forum and to the American people just demonize us.
I mean, I somewhat disagree, because some of these people, like in Hollywood, I mean, they have to set up like secret conservative societies in Hollywood.
Right.
If it wasn't for being demonized in their personal lives, they wouldn't have to do that.
What do you mean?
Well, you said that in their personal lives, they don't go and demonize people who they know.
Yeah, I'm saying like your Chris Cuomo's and your Don Lemon's certainly know people who are conservative or have people in their family that are conservative, that I'm sure they're not going home and saying, you are an incompassionate grandmother killer, I hate you, like they do on CNN.
I mean, maybe not. But, you know, just as Dennis Prager talks about, I mean, he talks about the amount of people, the amount of young people. He says it's like a huge amount of young people that he talks to that no longer will talk to their parents because who they voted for or because they're unvaccinated. And they're not journalists. That's just their personal life.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that people, yes, in their personal lives are just as willing to go out and be on this moral high ground on people.
I think some are, but that's not typical. It's becoming more typical, and it's still unusual. And that's why we point it out and go, that's really crazy that you're advocating that people don't go see their families because of political beliefs. And it's relatively new for America. It is definitely not the industry standard when it comes to this country and the way that we function politically. It is happening more so over the past couple of years than ever before. And that's terrifying. It truly is.
Yeah.
You're gonna say something?
I don't know. I just I think that it's a leftism problem. I think that is what leftism does to people. I think it turns them into self-righteous people who feel like they need to put their societal morality onto others. I mean, that is what the collective mentality of leftism is.
Exactly.
Right? Leftism is collectivism. If other people don't agree with you, then you don't have leftism. You just have some guy pondering and pontificating about Karl Marx's ludicrous thoughts. So I think that by the nature of it, you are going out and talking to other people and saying, you know, I don't agree with you. I want your ideology destroyed.
Well, yeah, I think that it naturally breeds that, because if you're trying to create a collective and there's individuals who don't want to be a part of it, of course, you're going to X them from the collective. I think that is standard. But we've seen that over, you know, the past few decades, not breach into family until very recently. That has not been something that's been standard. We've all been going home for Thanksgiving dinner and sitting down with each other and having Christmas and, you know, bringing the grandparents, bringing the grandkids over to see the grandparents. Only in the past, I don't know, 5 years has it become such a big issue that families are disbanding.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that is definitely true, that it has not always been a problem in America. Right. But now it is. And I think that people do have that mentality and go out and do this to people.
Right, right. Now, speaking of being X'd from the collective in a significant way, here's a story out of ABC, and this is going to affect us here in Los Angeles. 113 LAFD firefighters removed from duty without pay for failing to meet the city's vaccination mandate. A total of 113 firefighters are now being removed due to this mandate. For municipal employees, the department announced on Monday.
Yeah, so I actually work with this group, Firefighters for Freedom. I spoke at their rally back in, this was maybe 3 weeks ago, a month ago, mm-hmm. when this was all happening. It was about 8,000 people there. It was firefighters, public works, first responders, things of that nature. And so actually for this year, for Christmas, I'm actually doing a fundraiser for the Firefighters for Freedom, for these firefighters who have lost their jobs and no longer have a way to provide for themselves because of what the city has done to them. So in the link down in the description, there's going to be a link where you can donate to Firefighters for Freedom to make sure that they are satiated during this holiday season, that they can afford gifts for their kids, that they can afford a place to live because they have been fired for essentially not getting the jab. And then there's also down in the description, we have a P.O. box for them. And so at this P.O. box, maybe you don't have the money to give or anything. You can write a letter showing your support for these firefighters. So that is going to be down in the description. And all those letters are going to be sent out. But try and send them in soon so the firefighters and first responders can get them before Christmas. Once again, that's Firefighters for Freedom. You can find them on Instagram and all over social media. And we hope that you can donate to them this year.
Remember when firefighters were essential workers? Remember when they said, you know, give a meal and give a pat on the back to your first responders today because they're the ones out there doing the hard work as COVID-19 runs rampant throughout the population. They're the ones risking their lives for this virus. Now, suddenly, 113 of them are completely insignificant because they've chosen not to be vaccinated. Men and women who dedicate their lives and risk their lives to save other people, to help families, to get in domestic violence situations, fire situations, save people's animals, like do all everything under the sun for our community are now being pushed aside because they've chosen not to get a medical treatment.
Yeah, we don't live in a serious country. If we lived in a serious country, then these people would take COVID seriously. And they would say, okay, we need all these people to be on board so that we can actually fight all these evil things happening. I mean, crime has gone up by 200% in Los Angeles. Our governor let out 76,000 prisoners out of jail this year. Mm-hmm. 76,000. And you're telling me that we have the capabilities to fire police officers, firefighters, yep. first responders, public works employees now? How does that make any sense? We live in a bad society, especially California. I mean, California is a very bad society. But the rest of America, too, is following down the same path in many respects, other than maybe Florida. But these people were the heroes and now are the pariahs, the people who need to be excommunicated. If the virus was all that serious, this wouldn't be necessary.
Yeah, and we talked about it yesterday, the just sheer exponential rise in crime that's happening in California and across the United States. These are the people who respond to that. These are the people who help you when you are in these situations, and you are now going to just leave them aside because they are not vaccinated. It's not okay. And it's only going to be to your own detriment, to their detriment, to the detriment of your communities. Our communities are deteriorating because of what is happening here. People's lives and their livelihoods, their families are deteriorating because of what we are doing and what these councils are advocating for. They said here that the firefighters who continue to resist the vaccination mandate will be entered into the process for termination of their employment as outlined in the city charter. Now, if this comes to fruition, that's 321 unvaccinated personnel who have filed for exemption now, and if they don't choose to get the vaccine, will be terminated.
Yeah, I mean, I'm working with these guys and talking to them. I actually just, on my way over here driving, I was on the phone with Mike, who's in charge of the firefighters thing, because he's helped me get the link for the donation page. But he's like, yeah, this is going to happen. He's like, for sure. He's like, for sure, all of us are going to get fired. They just know it, you know, and they're preparing for the worst, and they're pissed off and they're upset and they're sad, and they in many of them, you know, they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do.
Yeah. The craziest part of this to me is if you look at the replies of ABC's tweet in this news story, there are people like LA citizens who are like, yay, new job openings for people who actually care about keeping people safe. That has like 120 likes.
I see that.
You got it up there. Yep. Yeah. Look at this. And cut loose the dead weight. Good. Like we talked about people being on the wrong side of history. Like these are the people who are supporting taking away jobs of the people who are there to protect you. It's like the same way Seattle we talked about yesterday doubled down on the crime is spiking in Seattle. Then they voted to defund the police by what, $5 million more this year or something like that. There was one vote against it, and that was because they didn't cut enough. It's like, at what point do you say like you deserve to have your house burned down if you're voting against having firefighters? It makes absolutely no sense.
I think about like in Russia during communism in Russia, and it's like they took all there are all these farmers and all these peasants in Russia. Okay. And they went the communists and they asked them basically finding out if they're communists or not, or agree with the system. And some of them who were like, no, I'm not a communist. They sent them to the gulags. Anyone who was in defiance to the communist regime was sent to the gulags, okay? And what happened? I mean, they had famines. They had shortages of food because the people who are supposed to be these heroes who are doing all this good stuff for your society are being sent to work camps in Siberia. Right. So, I mean, what do you expect? What is going to happen from this? It is common sense of what is going to happen. More fires are going to happen. More fires are not going to be able to put out, where people are going to die. People are going to loot these places. I mean, and then when it comes to the police, more crime, all of this, it's already happening. So it is predictive programming. I mean, we already know what's going to happen, and it sucks that we just have to kind of sit here and wait for it, but we don't have to leave these guys hanging them out to dry. Yep. The donation link, remember, is in the description of this video, where you can give to the Firefighters for Freedom, making sure that money goes to the families and homes of all these great firefighters.
Absolutely. Some of the most altruistic and valiant people in our society. And it's just ridiculous what is happening to them. So please go and support them. We're going to get into a couple more stories here before we go and do this political typology test. Here's a story talking about Prince Harry. So Prince Harry was recently doing an interview to talk about a company that he's working with called Better Up that works on mental health. And he was asked about the Great Resignation and what his thoughts were specifically on the sort of burnout and mental health issues that people were feeling that caused them to leave their jobs during this Great Resignation. And Prince Harry responded by saying that he looked into the Great Resignation and he finds that the quitting of the jobs is really not all that bad. And if you're quitting your job to improve your mental health, maybe that's something that's good for you. So I thought we should have a discussion about this. Taylor and I sort of discussed it yesterday. Is that sound advice? Is it a proper depiction of what's happening in America right now with the Great Resignation coming from Prince Harry, who is, you know, made his home here.
Mm-hmm. Well, coming from Prince Harry, it's not a very compelling argument because, you know, Prince Harry has never had to work a job in his life.
Right.
I know people who used to run clubs in London who would see Prince Harry just getting absolutely wasted doing all sorts of things. So it's not like this guy is any sort of indication of a hardworking guy, you know? So I don't really agree that he's the one to talk about it, but in a sense, what he said, I agree with.
Uh-huh.
I do agree with. You know, this is why so many people are moving to, like we talked about before, homesteading, into moving away from our big urban cities. I mean, I think that COVID, as a silver lining for people, is like, I've been working at my cubicle for 10 hours for some guy, some boss who doesn't give a crap about me. And I'm sitting here doing mindless work with some stupid degree that I drank my way through.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm sitting here in this box and what is my life? You know? Yeah. And so COVID kind of made people have to go back home and realize like, why was I driving to this place every single day? What was I doing with my life? And so in some ways it is good. It is good for mental health, you know, for people to be able to go and be a little bit more entrepreneurial and go start small businesses and work from home or maybe go homestead or whatever else it is. So I agree with him in that respect. It just doesn't hold a candle much coming from him.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about because I'm one of those people where I'm like, there's value in having a work community and going into an office and knowing the people there and just having people who are outside of your home and not being in your home all day. But people seem to prefer it. And if that's something you prefer in your personal life, then absolutely like pursue that as an option for you. And of course, COVID elevated that option and made it more present and far less out of reach than it was before. So sure, if that's your thing, by all means. And I think there is something to be said about your job being significantly linked to your mental health. And if your job is exacerbating problems that you have with mental health, or even causing problems with mental health, then by all means, do something different. The key there is do something different. It's not, you know, the millions that we've seen who have gone, you know what, I'm not going to re-enter the job market because I didn't like my job before and the government's giving me money. There's a balance there, and there's still a need to, you know, as Taylor would say, be as employed as you are intelligent.
Oh, that's a Jordan Petersonism.
Oh, well, there you go.
I think there's, you know, there's the road, and then there's the two ditches with this. And the one on one side, you have, you know, I'm in a toxic situation at work, or in a situation that I'm putting myself in every day that is just making me bang my head against the wall, or mm-hmm. I'm being taken advantage of, I'm being treated unfairly, and yet I'm just going in for more every day, or it's just mind numbing, or whatever it may be. And weakness looks like continuing on in that and not acting on your own behalf to get out of it. But then on the other ditch that I think you can fall into is this whole culture of like pulling the mental health card anytime times get tough. And it's like, oh, well, it's not fun for me, or I'm not, you know, I'm not having, whatever it may be that you have these little arguments where it's like unpleasant and you're kind of giving up and you're pulling the mental health card because, it's just too hard. And there are times in which you need to dig deep, push through, figure out, you know, how to better assert yourself to make your situation better, whether that means making it better within where you're working or finding another opportunity or whatever it may be. But I think I don't want to like justify or lend credence to this whole like, you know, oh, if I just pull the mental health card and do whatever weak thing I want to do, then no one can criticize me. I don't really like that.
That's why it's bad coming from him.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what does strength look like? And this came up, we had a similar discussion in the whole, when Simone Biles withdrew from the Olympics after, you know, over with her mental health, which that's a little bit different because it's sort of like her being on the team was to the exclusion of other people who would have otherwise been there. And she had a bigger, broader duty to the U.S. And that's kind of what we argued, that it was kind of weak to withdraw there, at least Will and I think. And then Amala was kind of more on the other side.
We were proven right too.
What do you mean?
Like things more came out about it was like, oh yeah, like we were definitely right.
But anyway, yeah. I mean, I think that's basically my take, is like you can fall into the ditch of, you know, staying somewhere you shouldn't be, and it looks like weakness to stay there, but then you can also fall into the ditch of like, well, just I'm waving the white flag as soon as times get tough, and I don't think you should be either one of those. You should assert yourself, you should be strong, you should act on your own behalf, and whatever that looks like for you in your situation. I don't think it's like a blanket statement.
It's not that you're not tough enough, it's that you're unsatisfied.
Yeah.
You know,
but that should drive you to assert yourself. Right. Yeah. And figure out, okay, well, am I not qualified for another job? Then I better figure out a way to get qualified for that. Get a certificate, get educated, whatever. Find someone who's in a different industry that I'm interested in and start acting on your own behalf to go there. Like, don't just complain and be like, oh, I'm just going to quit because it's hard. Like, I hate that.
Yeah. I think with how urbanized and cosmopolitan our world has gotten, that it has turned people into the other extreme, you know, where they're like, I've been in this city for too long in LA or New York or whatever, and I just need to get out and not see anyone and have a little home with chickens and farm and all that kind of stuff. It's like push people that way because of how bad that it has gotten. You know, it wouldn't be a means for that, you know, regardless, but because of how bad it's gotten, it's turned into that.
Yeah, but I feel like that's turned into that for people who are leaning conservative and working in a desk job, but the majority of people are not going, oh, I'm going to start a garden now and have a chicken and cows. The majority of them are saying, well, I don't want to go into an office and socialize with people. I want to sit at home and not put on work clothes and not look good, and I can sit in front of my Mac computer and work for 8 hours as opposed to going.
And I want my job to be perfectly meaningful and everything, the fulfillment of all my dreams, and I don't have to work my way up the ladder. I mean, that's some of the attitude I'm seeing in a lot of like Gen Z millennial types, is like this whole, I have to have my dream job, but also not like tough it out at all or work my way up or suffer at all in my career arc. And I think that's weak sauce.
No, yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah, and maybe
you can
homesteading
use it as a justification.
Yeah, maybe homesteading is growing as a result of this, but not as significantly as this sort of I'm not going to do anything but sit at home and work from my computer, I think is growing more so than anything else.
Right. Well, I see some merit to that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I always bring up Nietzsche. Nietzsche and Thus Spoke Zarathustra. When Zarathustra's talking about getting out of the town where he felt like he couldn't convince the people of his prophecies and his teachings, he said, I feel like a bee that has collected too much honey. He's like gone out into this world, gone into communities and tried to communicate with people. And after a certain point, it's like you are now letting the world around you influence you instead of the other way around. You go into places of community or around other people, and instead of you being someone to try and influence them, they end up influencing you. And that can be very sad for people, especially with the social media age, especially with workplace environment, with all this HR stuff. I mean, going and constantly having to be on film or video, all these kind of things are very pressuring for people. So I think that there is a reason for this, is that people have become so connected in that way and so influenced by the outside world, they no longer know themselves, which goes back into a bigger question of God and meaning in life and all that, and nihilism. But really what it means is that people feel like they no longer know themselves because they've been so influenced by the outside world. So they want to escape inwards by being in a place like that. Now, obviously, there's laziness and there's all these kind of things. I'm not trying to justify everyone going to doing this, but I'm saying that there are problems with our technological world that are making people want to be alone.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I don't see like working from home as like you separating yourself from the outside world. I see it as you just sort of going in and plugging yourself in every morning and to do your thing, and then you plug out of your pod in the morning and you go to bed and you do the same thing over and over again. So I guess I just view it differently, as in I don't see people seeking their individualism through that. And I think talking with other people and being social is a large part of that. It's so funny that we've sort of catalyze this growth of technology, saying it's going to make your life easier. It's going to make your life easier. Working is going to be more efficient. You're going to work less. People aren't really working less. You have all this technology that's supposed to boost your efficiency, and still you're working 8 to 10 hours a day. So what happened there is that they convinced you of this sort of progressive new form of technology, and here, take it. Let's do it. It's going to make your life so much easier. Your life is still the same, just taking on a different form. You're just not in your office cubicle anymore. You're not running around. You're not doing physical labor anymore. You're just doing the same thing in front of your technology, and now we're just completely and utterly plugged in to whether working through technology or being on social media or watching YouTube videos or streaming Netflix, and there's so little outside of that in many people's lives.
That is exactly true.
Yeah,
that's totally true.
So I think this is an opportunity, and this restructuring is going to restructure the way that Americans live and the way that people across the world live. I think there's an opportunity to make this really, really great. There's a lot of potential energy here, but if it's not used and we just sort of slink into our little pods and do the same things we've been doing just now from home, it's not going to get any better. Yeah. Which is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Now, guys, we're going to test our political typology. I don't know exactly how we're going to do this, because I'm quite positive Will and I are going to have different answers. So maybe we'll choose to put in one of our answers and we'll just get yours. We'll get whoever's actual political typology, and I'm sure we'll be able to distinguish where I would have landed in relation. So we'll probably do Will's, because I did mine earlier. I know where I land. So we'll look into it and see where we get. We're going to start the quiz here.
You guys, extremist.
This is going to be censored by YouTube. They're going to use this as evidence for why they have radical right-wing extremists on the podcast.
So we'll all give our opinions, but it'll be Will's answers on this one. And you guys can answer down below in the chat as well. What would you answer for these specific questions? So this is, where do you fit in the political typology? Let's start the quiz here. Okay, question one. If you had to choose, would you rather have a smaller government providing fewer services or a bigger government providing more services? Easy one.
I have to think about it.
Okay. Will wants to use the government as a club to beat leftism into smithereens.
There's definitely a lot of merit to that. But I think in a perfect world, a smaller government.
Okay.
Definitely.
Same. I'm going to say the same. Okay.
But yes.
Say what you need to say.
I'm writing a whole piece about that.
Okay, well, good. Question 2 of 16. Which of the following statements come closest to your views? Number one, America's openness to people from all over the world is essential to who we are as a nation. Or two, if America is too open to people from all over the world, we risk having our identity as we risk losing our identity as a nation.
Two. Easy.
Two. What do you think, Taylor?
I think it's a false dichotomy. Like, there, I think those are yin and yang.
Right.
But I would say if I had to pick one, for the moment we are in, we don't even have a secure southern border.
Yep.
We don't have norms and values that bind us together as a nation anymore. And so adding more people into that that aren't being forced to integrate. I saw a video the other day in a certain district of a certain person in Minnesota, of men of a different country, different religion, going Say into someone's house, bursting the door open and beating women because they violated some laws of their thing in America. That happened in America, like trespassing, assault with a weapon, just on the basis of having these different norms and different cultures. But that is what's happening in our country.
Yep.
Not okay. So for that reason, I would pick the second option.
Amla, did you know Taylor was Islamophobic?
Yeah, xenophobe too. Wow, that's really, we're learning a lot here today, guys. This is quite the quiz. I mean, yeah, you can
take beating women like that as part of their culture.
Taylor.
Okay. All cultures are equal.
Yeah, Taylor. No, but look at the UK, look at France, look at Canada and what happened when they let a bunch of people into their country without any form of assimilation. The caveat here is America is an open country to people from everywhere, so long as the system is in place to assimilate and so long as the system is in place to go through legal citizenship and teach them American values, traditions and laws. So as of today, I think we all agree, without the proper policy, America, if too open, would lose its, you know, nationhood.
Yeah. Already has.
And next. Question three. In general, would you say experts who study a subject for many years are, one, usually better at making good policy decisions about that subject than other people? Two, usually worse at making good policy decisions about the subject than other people? Or three, neither better nor worse at making good policy decisions about the subject than other people?
Three.
I'm going to agree. Three. Look at how much horrible policy and legislation has been put in place by people who claim to be experts.
Actually, I'm going to change it to two.
Two?
Yeah.
Just the contrary.
They're usually worse.
Never the contrarian.
Yes.
I mean, sure. I could hear an argument for two, but
if this is talking about politics specifically, then two, definitely. I mean, if it's a greater thing, like, you know, you're not going to ask some guy who doesn't know anything about being an electrician how to fix your light, you know, fixtures.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I think it's neither better.
This is politics. This is politics.
Yeah.
So for politics too, for sure. These people, I mean, they know, did you hear any of these hearings that these guys in Congress are talking about when it came to social media? They don't even know what Facebook is.
But that's just the experts that we've happened to, they're not experts. So it's like, if we looked at like,
experts are so like,
if we like homelessness and policy in different states, Michael Schellenberger is technically an expert and I would trust him to make the policy that is better than the policy that we currently have.
Yeah, but there are other bureaucrats who are quote unquote experts that are, so it's more about parsing out what do we mean when we say expert.
Which is why I say neither better nor worse.
Yeah me too, because the fact that one expert is likely to disagree with another, well, how do you parse that? And then another person who, it's like the truth exists outside of anyone's expertise. So it's like there is a right way to wire your house or a better way, but in order for us to continue discovering better ways, it needs to be an open discussion. You need to have people, whether they're credentialed or not, be able to contribute to the discussion. And that's why I'm team number two.
Okay, so what you're saying usually worse?
No, three.
Okay, so either better or worse. Taylor and I are neither better nor worse, and Will is usually worse. So we're putting in usually worse for Will. Mm-hmm. Moving on. Okay, question four. Thinking about increased trade of goods and services between the U.S. and other nations in recent decades, would you say that the U.S. has, one, gained more than it has lost because its increased trade has helped lower prices and increase the competitiveness of some U.S. businesses, or two, lost more than it has gained because increased trade has cost jobs in manufacturing and other industries and lowered wages for some of U.S. workers?
Two.
I knew you were going to say that.
I knew he was going to say that too.
What's your thoughts?
You know, I would want to lean towards like this sort of, it's increasing competitiveness in U.S. business, but I don't think it is now because of like the oligarchy that we have in so many of our businesses. I don't think it's increasing competitiveness. I think it's distinctly hurt small businesses. I think our relationship with China is garbage. So I think I'm going to go with number two as well.
Yeah, I had to think about this one for quite a while. But just for the sake of argument, speaking of expertise here, I do have an MBA. So for macroeconomics, for markets to function efficiently and for you to be competitive, like if you demand that things be manufactured in your home country and that your work manufacturer laborers make good wages, what that does is makes you not competitive on a global scale and the rest of the world can easily leave you behind and your country can be screwed by that. And that's if you have macroeconomic policies that are too isolationist, then it can make you non-competitive and you'll fall behind. If if you look at the growth curve of the U.S. GDP and the American economy in recent decades, it is through the roof. Yep. I do think that it has been like to, I sympathize with the, with the point that there has been not enough regulation.
Yep.
We have way become way too dependent on China, and that is very bad, and that we should repatriate a lot of these, this manufacturing jobs. We should do more of the things that the last administration was doing to improve our economic situation for, to look out for the interests of American laborers and such. But if that was our only policy from the beginning, we never would have had that growth in the first place.
See, I don't, I don't advocate for demanding. I advocate for incentivizing.
Exactly.
That is my thing. And I don't think we're incentivizing it enough as a country.
Well, of course, if Tim Cook can make his Apple phones with slaves in China.
Right.
And that's another huge thing. Of course they're going
to do that. And yeah, it just shows you how much we've lost our soul, not just as a nation, but as like a Western civilization, is that we all know darn well that this is happening, that slave labor is being used by all these big companies in China, and that China is responsible for North Korea. They're responsible for the atrocious human rights abuses all through history, so that are or through recent decades that are super well documented. And yet we can stare that in the face and be like, oh, we'll still send our athletes to your country. We'll still, you know, do business with you. And there's no accountability. But to me, that's more of the soullessness, that there's no moral fiber in America, which used to be the leader of the Western world in this and the Western world at large, to say, we see this slavery happen, modern day slavery and human rights abuses and genocide happen that China's perpetrating. But here, we're still going to change our movies to work with you, and we're still going to use your cheap labor. It's like, that is greed. That is capitalism at its worst, unregulated. That is bad, and that shouldn't be the case. And our morality should hold that in check, and it hasn't. And that's that's the core of, to me, the core of our problems today.
I mean, yeah, either of these options would are defendable. I'm just going to say, like, on the crimes against humanity alone, on the disincentivizing of American business alone, I'm going to say lost. That's where I land. Where are you at, Taylor? You're at gain still?
No, I mean, from, if you're looking at this from a purely economic lens, you would say gained.
Right.
If you look at it from the moral lens, I would say loss.
Right.
So
okay.
That's why I would say loss.
Yeah, I'm gonna go loss morally. And Will's going lost.
Will was lost from the first.
Yeah, Will was right lost. There. He's just been there. Know. Perfect. Okay.
Say more.
Question five: how much more, if anything, needs to be done to ensure equal rights for all Americans, regardless of their racial or ethnic backgrounds?
Nothing.
One, a lot. A little. Nothing at all.
Nothing.
Nothing.
I have to think.
Any devil's advocate here, Amala?
I need a quick think on this. Really quick. I mean, most of the issues that boil down to having disparities among racial and ethnic backgrounds have far more to do with socioeconomic status. So I think that needs to be worked on. There needs to be things done for that. It just happens to affect people through racial disparities.
Well, here, I would say there's the argument I have for a lot to be done is erasing the systemic racism of things like affirmative action,
erasing
the systemic racism that of all the leftist policies and norms that have been instituted in corporate America. To that create these what do you call them, like your quotas, diversity, like all that, that's the systemic racism that needs to be rooted out to achieve actual equality.
But it's like, you know, that's like, if that is the lens that we're looking through, then a little is the answer, but you know that that's not the lens that this question is being asked
exactly.
in. So the question, so the answer is nothing at all.
Kind of bad. Who wrote these questions?
Nothing at all.
Pew Research Center.
Pew Research Center.
So. They're like not worded very well to give you like a lot of room for.
I know.
I don't usually like these types of quizzes, but
we should make our own quiz.
Still interesting.
Yes,
we will. Like, yeah, put it out. Maybe put it out for you guys. Nothing at all. Oh, sorry. Moving on. Number six. Which of the following statements comes closest to your view? One, business corporations make too much profit. Two, most corporations make a fair and reasonable amount of profit.
See, this is such a very
bad question.
It's like such a bad question.
No nuance.
Yeah.
No nuance.
But I think it's designed to get your like general disposition toward these things. But you could, the problem is you could be answering this from one perspective, and then they can group you into the group that they put you in, but you meant it from a totally different perspective, and that's the annoying part.
Like, what is too much money? Like, exactly. That's so arbitrary, especially with like inflation. Like that. I don't know. I guess I'll say too much money.
Okay, Taylor. What do you think?
I think I said too much money on this too.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't.
Yeah, I don't know.
You can flip a coin. Like,
I don't think there's.
When it says, okay, it literally says most corporations. Like, most corporations are much smaller. They're not these, you know, if you're talking about the number of corporations that exist, it's a small, tiny percentage that make the way too much money. And so from that lens, you could say, okay, those corporations make too much money, but most corporations are smaller, small businesses and stuff that are corporate. Money. Yeah, they don't make
enough. I would not say that anybody makes too much money. But the issue that I take with businesses and corporations is what they do with their money. It's not the fact that they've amassed it. So if I were to tomorrow come up with something that makes me the next Jeff Bezos, I would not have a problem with the amount of profit that I've amassed. I have a problem with what they do with that profit. So that doesn't mean that there's a cap that I would put on people and say, when your corporation makes this, you're making too much. So I would say that most corporations make fair and reasonable.
Yeah, no. I mean, the argument for saying that they make too much money is like they're using anti-competitive practices.
Right. But but that's an argument for regulation of them, right?
Yes, but they're still making too much money, according to this quiz.
I guess it's just the lens of the question again.
I know, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess we're going too much money.
But we're winning because we're more nuanced than this quiz.
So we are more nuanced.
It's leading to good discussion. Yeah.
Okay, oops, sorry, next. How much, if at all, would it bother you to regularly hear people speak a language other than English in public places in your community? Would this bother you a lot, some, not much, or not at all?
A lot.
A lot?
Oh, no.
No, really? I'm just kidding. Not a lot. Listen, I...
Not at all for me.
Not at all?
No, not at all.
Yeah, I think I'm team not at all.
What? Why?
Look, dude, we live in Los Angeles. Like, you go to the mall, there's like 20 million different races and everything.
And if this person can't understand their own family, that's like not good.
Well, it's not to say that they can't understand you. It's that to say when you go out in public, you regularly hear people speak a language other than English. That doesn't bother me at all. As long as when I speak to you, you can understand and we can, that's fine.
No, a nation has a heritage.
That's fine.
And people came here speaking English.
We agree with that. I mean, Pamela and I both agree with that. But it doesn't the question is, does it bother you to hear people speak another language and you go out regularly? And it doesn't.
Is this question supposed to like pigeonhole someone into being a racist?
If
people like being, if they're from, I don't know, China and they're talking in Chinese, like whatever, do what you want, you know? But living in this country, you need to speak English. Like that is our language. You need to be able to speak English.
They're not saying that they're not able to speak English.
Well, that's a dumb question again.
It is.
It's just bad.
I mean, it is. I think it is exactly designed to pigeonhole you.
Why are we taking this test? This is a stupid test.
Well, either.
These questions are not.
So we're putting not at all.
I think a little.
No, don't put
for Will. It's Will's answer.
Yeah. What do you want? You want not much, some, a lot?
The one that's not at all.
Bother you, not much.
Not much.
Sure, not much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Question 8. Okay, on a scale, this one's going to be difficult. I don't know how you scale this. On a scale of 0 to 100.
It's going
to
be 0.
Where 0 means you feel cold and negative as possible, and 100 means you feel warm and positive as possible, how do you feel towards Democrats? 0 to 100. In general.
What?
How do you feel towards Democrats? Does it make you feel cold? Unbelievably cold? Like a 0?
What kind of rating system
cold
is
and
this?
Negative. Cold and negative is 0. Warm and positive is 100. Where do you lie when it comes to Democrats?
I mean, there's some Democrats that make you feel a little warm.
Okay. So where are you at?
But 10? Yeah. Like, what's her name?
Tulsi Gabbard.
Shoe.
Yeah, she's great. I would say like a 20.
Oh, wow.
That's generous. Very low. I was going to put 80 or 90. Okay.
Wait. How you feel about Democrats?
Yes.
You
feel
90?
Warm towards Democrats?
Yeah, I would say I feel warm.
Democrats want to destroy your life.
Look, okay, if Democrats dealt with the far left in any appropriate way and were completely infected and overrun by Marxism right now, then I would be much more, I would say, I know a lot of reasonable Democrats, but all those people are like leaving the Democrat Party.
Yeah, I know. I'm just thinking about it like average people. And when I meet a Democrat, an average person, like 20% of them get on my nerves. The other 80%, I'm like, oh, you're fine. I'd hang out with you. So I put 80%. That's 20. Why. I'm not thinking about it like the elites, but I don't know if you guys are thinking about it through.
I'm thinking about it in terms
general?
Of like, these are people who primarily political, from a primary political lens, Democrat, how do you feel about
the
people
world.
Who like their whole worldview, they live
okay,
and
well,
breathe,
then maybe
we're not talking
50%.
Politics.
We're not talking about like Aunt Sally who bakes cookies, but also voted for Joe Biden. Like,
well, then
we're talking
maybe
about like, what is a Democrat? This is what a Democrat is.
Well, then I'd give it maybe 50 or 40. Okay, so you're saying 20. How do you feel towards...
Democrat media wants to destroy everything you know and destroy the truth. I mean, people like Ilhan Omar are blatant anti-Semites. I mean, the other people in there are blatant socialists and communists. I mean, to give these people more than a 20 is like ludicrous to me.
Well, I'm putting other people than just them in my category when I think about Democrats.
Yet another failure of the quiz.
Exactly. Yet another failure.
It's interesting, though, to see how each of us interprets
the
question.
Yeah, because we think differently. How do you feel towards Republicans, 0 to 100?
40.
40.
Wow, I thought Will would say 0 for both of these.
Yeah, exactly. 0-0. I'll go 40 because there are some good guys. I mean, there are some definite.
But again, on this side of it, it makes me uncomfortable to say, like, you know, I feel very warm towards Republicans because I really, like, when I think Republican, I usually think, like, you know, chill.
Right.
More
right.
Before I think, like, oh, there are lots of people I agree with who happen to be Republican. But again, I hate this question because it's, like, primarily about party affiliation, and that's, none of us are really that focused on that. We're focused on, like, right and wrong,
right,
and nuance, the issues themselves, and not, like, party affiliation. So I'm cold toward both of these.
Gotcha.
That's why I was listening to Matt Gaetz this weekend talk, and he was talking about, you know, election integrity is the biggest issue that people on the right need to talk about right now. Because if you don't have election integrity, then even if people do, let's say everyone becomes warm to Republicans and everyone loves Republicans, if they don't feel like their vote means anything, then they're not going to want to participate. So, I mean, we have so many people who are just disenfranchised with it, and there's election integrity. It's like, what is going to happen? I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting.
So how are we answering this one?
We did 2040.
Okay.
Next question, question number 9. Which of these statements best describes your opinion about the United States? 1, the United States stands above all other countries in the world. 2, the United States is one of the greatest countries in the world, along with some others. 3, there are other countries that are better than the United States.
I hate these questions.
I would say 2. That's my answer.
No, I'm going to say 1.
You're going to say 1?
For sure.
You're going to say 1.
What country is even close to the United States?
It says United States is one of the greatest countries in the world, along with some others. I think there's other countries that do things better than the way that we do them. So asserting that would mean that there are other great countries because they do better than what we do.
That is true. There are other countries that do better than America in some respects, but that doesn't mean that they are a better country than us.
Yeah, but there's other countries that handle just like a bunch of things better than the United States. Like they handle family better, drugs better, homelessness
with
better, healthcare better.
With their population of 3 million, that's completely homogenous with values.
Right, I completely agree, but that doesn't mean, you know,
well, does that make them a better country, though, that they happen to have a few programs because it's easier to have programs that and economic situations that
it makes
they
it
don't even have better outcomes.
They don't have a U.S. Constitution like us.
Exactly. Right, I agree.
They don't have the best culture that is founded on Judeo-Christian values.
I
and
agree.
Rationalism.
I agree.
Right. So, no, they're not
number
better.
One. Yeah, number one.
Hey, guys. Number one, next.
Don't get me riled up about defending America.
I guess so. I didn't say anything bad about America.
Yes, you did.
Nothing bad about America.
You said it's not the greatest country in the world.
Mm-mm. Said it's one of. Okay, next. How much of a problem, if any, would you say each of the following are in the country today? 1, people being too easily offended by things others say. Is that a major problem, a minor problem, or not a problem?
Major
problem. I agree. 2, people saying things that are offensive to others. Major problem, minor problem, not a problem.
Not a problem.
Not a problem.
Not a problem. I agree.
Well, it's a problem because people won't say what they believe because they're worried about offending others. But I understand what the question's saying.
Right. Not a problem. Next. Which comes closer to your view of candidates for political office? Even if neither is exactly right, I usually feel like 1, there's at least one candidate who shares most of my views. 2, none of the candidates represent my views very well.
I am very big on the lesser of two evils. I am a big supporter of the lesser of two evils mentality. So I will just say yes.
What? That there's a candidate who shares most of your views?
Yes, because I will make one. You know, even if that's not the perfect candidate, I will choose that one over the other evil.
Ann Taylor?
Yeah, I mean, again, I could go both ways. Like, I don't think there's any candidate that it's like, I mean, wouldn't you like to know? But yeah, I don't think there's any one particular candidate that I'm like, oh yeah, this is my person. And like, you know, but that I have seen recently some that I'm like, I could totally support this guy. So, you know, I
guess. At least one candidate shares most of
the
views.
Yeah, so at least one does.
Okay, next. In general, how much do white people benefit from advantages in society that black people do not have? A great deal, a fair amount, not too much, not at all.
Not at all.
Not too much.
Okay. Do you guys want to...
No, let's finish this.
Put any exposition on this? Okay. Next, question 13. Do you think greater social acceptance of people who are transgender, people who identify as a gender that is different from the sex that they were assigned at birth, is very good for society, somewhat good for society, neither good nor bad for society, somewhat bad for society, very bad for society?
Can you reread the question with all the extra stuff?
Do you think greater social acceptance of people who are transgender is very good, somewhat good?
Not good.
Okay. Taylor?
This is another case where I hate the question. If you look at it, it says greater greater social acceptance of people. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we should accept people, but yes. I completely reject the ideology that is causing them to identify in all these ways. And
exactly.
Whatever. Like, if you're talking about someone who has, what is it called? The
gender dysphoria.
Gender dysphoria. We should, they should be accepted as human beings, yep. of course.
Yep.
But if you're talking about, should people who are fully bought into gender ideology to the point where they're doing surgeries with their bodies and wanting to force that on children and all this stuff, is that good for America? No.
Yeah, my answer is for this is somewhat good just because I think social acceptance of it is important, but that doesn't come with the, you know, adding the other stuff onto the bandwagon.
Me and Will are shaking our heads.
It's literally what you just said.
But yeah, I mean,
it's yeah.
As an ideological standpoint, not at all.
Yeah.
You know. Okay, so you're putting very bad for society.
Well, they're going to make me sound like a transphobe when this stupid quiz finishes.
But that's why we're qualifying it with, it's not about the person.
Right.
Them.
Yeah, exactly. The ideas, I mean, it's about the ideas, the ideology. It's toxic ideology to say that you can do all these things at a whim is against God's word. I mean, it's just not true. So I suppose I will say that answer.
Okay. So we got what? Neither good nor bad from Taylor? What was yours? Or somewhat bad?
My answer is veto this question. It sucks.
Okay. Next.
I'll just take that.
Overall, would you say people who are convicted of crimes in this country serve too much time in prison, too little time in prison, about the right amount of time in prison?
Not enough time.
Not enough time.
But it depends on the crime. It's so stupid. I know. Quiz. Yeah, I know. Why did we take this quiz? It's the worst quiz I've ever seen.
I would deviate on that. Anyways, next.
Just look at the crime in the country right now, though. Like, that is...
Yeah, but that's because we've decriminalized it. It's not because that
spending,
they were...
Oh, it's because they're spending too little time in prison? Yeah, exactly.
Well, now, currently, they're spending too little time in prison. But that was not always the case, unfortunately.
Yeah, but that's asking you here now.
Yeah.
Which of the following statements comes closest to your views? Religion should be kept separate from government policies. Government policies should support religious values and beliefs.
I hate this question as well.
100%.
I'm separate.
Yeah, I mean, it says government policies should support religious values and belief. If that means like upholding freedom of religion, then But if it means like putting religious dogma into law, if it is like putting religious values as the spirit of your laws, then I'm like, okay. I mean, if it's part of the framework of how you govern, that should happen. So I just hate how this question is worded.
Okay, but Will's leaning should. Okay, yes. So we're going to put should.
Definitely should.
And next. Okay, last question. In the future, do you think U.S. policies should try to keep it so America is the only military superpower? Or that it would be acceptable if another country became as militarily powerful as the U.S.?
Number one.
Submit. What
you
is
are
Will?
A domestic terrorist.
Faith and flag conservative.
Nice.
Along with 10% of the public. Faith and flag conservatives are highly religious, politically engaged, and intensely conservative when it comes to both social and economic issues. They favor a robust role for Christianity in public life and a small role for government in society. And they hold a strong American military. Hold that a strong American military is essential to international affairs.
Can someone say base department? Oh, wait, who's that? Oh, based is calling? Okay.
That's put hilarious. Them on. It puts religious conservatives, highly politically engaged, strong Trump supporters.
See, but
is what it says.
They just use this to like, you know, again, you know, pigeonhole you into their preconceived idea of what it means.
Right.
Like, faith and like, I would not call myself a faith and flag conservative and all this stuff that like the way they're characterizing it.
But right.
Anyway, I hate.
No, they want to make it.
It's like I hate this quiz, but it caused interesting discussion.
Yeah, so. It's still an interesting thing to go and talk through.
It was one of the worst quizzes I've ever
done. Oh my gosh, Will says that about everything.
Well, this one was legitimately.
Yeah, we should have done the quiz that you found and brought for the show today.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. I didn't find a quiz.
That's so weird. Anyways, guys, that's our show for you today. We hope that you enjoyed on your beautiful Wednesday afternoon. We will be back tomorrow at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. And if you guys want to listen to us throughout the week, over the weekend, you can go to Google Play, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Give us a listen on those apps. Leave us a 5-star review and follow us so that we know you love the show. Everybody else knows that you love the show. Thank you guys so much for watching. We will be back tomorrow.